Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
Hey, everybody. Happy Thursday. Welcome to back to Inside College Soccer Live, our Thursday edition. We're joined this week again by Chris Cousins. We've got Reese Canella, Joe Flanagan. Hey, guys, how are you doing?
Good. Thank you, Dom.
Good. But thanks, Dom.
We've got some questions that have come up this week in our groups, so we're going to do our best to try to get all to all the questions that we've got lined up. And then we want to talk a little bit about some current events that have been going on in college soccer to wrap this up. So what have we got? First, Chris?
Well, Don, I mean, we've got quite a few more questions than I thought. Maybe my early morning panic was wrong. So I apologize about that one. It was late night. But I wanted to just start off by introducing just a minute of the time of the podcast and the stream, just to introduce our like new academy that we're launching in Spain. So for anybody that doesn't know, we've been working with FC Malaga City in Spain for a number of years. So we've put our heads together and we've created the SIUSA Academy. And what that it basically is it's a prep academy in Spain. So what we have a lot of players out there that we send there to go work with Malaga City. But until it's going to be from next fall, actually, we've never had any staff there who's going to look after the players, help them with the college stuff. It's more being virtual, like whether it's staff in the US, whether it's staff in England or whatever, me stopping by. So we've got a lot of players there who want to go play in college, Malaga City looking after them perfectly. So what we're doing now is we've got our heads together and there's going to be SIUSA staff based in Spain. So it's a great opportunity for players who are maybe finishing high school or they actually want to continue the high school, maybe virtually, and kind of go spend a year or two in Spain. So it's a great opportunity to continue the football, the soccer education, the development, experience a new country, obviously, as well, your education, if you need to continue that as well. But Don, just asking you, because you've kind of worked with me on this sort of FC Malaga City thing for a number of years now. What have you found as a positive for people going to Spain?
The first thing is, Chris, is that I think most American kids don't understand the value of a gap year. And they don't, you know, they graduate high school and they're playing club with kids of their age group and of their level. And so even if they're dominating at that level, they feel like they should be able to translate that into college. And it doesn't always work that way. First time I experienced this, Chris, was with my own son. And he took off at 18 years old over to England and played for Team Bath for 2 years. Came back a completely different person. And I thoroughly believe that the success of his Division I college career would not have been as great had he gone straight out of high school. So what we've noticed with our kids that have been over there is that they get to grow up for a year, get to get used to being away from home, physically grow up more, mentally grow up, being able to mature a little bit. And we find that their success in the United States after they come back is much greater, most likely, than if they had gone directly. Reese, you just had one of your clients get some big recognition and awards after spending a year in Spain, didn't you, Asa?
Yeah, Asa Blake had a successful season at NAIA school, Milligan University. They just won their conference and he leads the team in points. So for him, you know, the pandemic, I think, impacted his recruiting like it did a lot of American kids. So he took the opportunity to go to Spain, played. He also went to showcase in England because, you know, obviously in Europe, you know, a 2-hour flight, you can get to a lot of different countries. And so he went to a showcase in England and then came back to the States, and it's just having that extra year under his belt of soccer and being away from home, maturing as a man, you know, mentally, like you said, and physically as well, as obviously led him to a success that, you know, he's got another few years in college. So I'm sure we'll see a lot more of Asa Blake.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I just wanted to quickly mention that. If anyone's interested at all, we're going to put some stuff out on social media over the next couple of days, emails out. But you can go to the website, sportsrecruitingusa.com/academy, and you'll be able to navigate your way there through the homepage as well. So, yeah, that's all I wanted to mention. Great opportunity launching fall 2023. If you want to go play college soccer, but maybe want to experience Europe as well, that's what we've set this up for. So thanks for that. So let's get answering some questions now. Here you are, Dom.
Shannon Hernandez Cruz. So she asks us, is it equally as good playing for a travel club as it is for a high school team when it comes to potential recruitment? My son is homeschooled and has only played travel since 6. So also wondering if the kid doesn't choose to go the college route but intends to play soccer, hopefully someday on a professional level, then how would you get the videos out there, and who else, and whatever else would you get out there to whomever? So two-part question. Joe, we'll let you start with this one if you want. What would you say to Shannon?
I mean, kind of confused on the question there. Is it equally good playing for a travel club?
So basically, is she missing out because her son isn't playing high school? Is her son missing out?
No, not in terms of next level stuff. I mean, I think high school's got serves a purpose in terms of enjoying your classmates and your teammates and your friends and being somebody on campus and enjoying that stuff. I think that's a nice experience. But in terms of going to the next level, being on a travel team, you know, and you know, traveling throughout your state or maybe surrounding states, is definitely going to be a better choice and a better way to get exposure for that next level stuff.
Yeah. Reese, we hear people ask all the time, you know, should my kid play high school? Should they stay with club? I know you know, coming from England, you didn't have the same, all right, high school / club experience. I'm a big fan, Reese, of the high school experience, of the big high school experience. I don't know that, you know, the soccer end of it is group club is probably better, but I think kids should enjoy that high school experience. What do you advise your clients?
Yeah, I think high school is good to play because you're now representing a school. You have the name on the front of your, you know, on your front of your shirt. And what happens is if you, I say misbehave, but if you get a yellow card, a red card, maybe cuss at the ref, whatever it might be, your peers who you have to be in class with the next day are seeing that, right? And so you have to carry yourself in the right manner. If you're playing club and you misbehave and you don't act in the right way, then, you know, it may go kind of unseen, you know, after that game. So, you know, this was a former coach that told me that he really values high school soccer because you do have your character sort of tested, right? And you are representing the school like you will if you go and play college. So I think it's important to play high school if you can. Now, I think if you can play high school and club, then that's a great combination. I think that allows you to play through a longer period of time. Now you're talking about, you know, 10 months, 11 months of the year, compared to if you just play high school, it might be about 3 months. So, you know, if you can do a combination of the two, then great.
Right. What do we got next, Chris? Grace Pryor asks, is there a difference between an ID clinic and an ID showcase? If so, what's the difference? I just answered this one, Chris, online. So by the way, everybody, you guys can go to our Facebook group. We've got college soccer recruiting resources for parents and players. And I think that's where this question comes from. And I described it to Grace as the difference being a clinic is more, think of it more like a camp, a clinic. You're going to be put through some drills. You're going to get to work with the coaches. They're going to coach you a little bit. You'll end up with an 11-a-side. They'll do some assessments and maybe talk to the players about the college experience, as opposed to a showcase. I like the showcase formats that have come out, because the old tournament format was, you know, basically you could play 5 games in 2 days. It was insane. Then the showcase format that they've been coming out with across the country is you play a game a day and that's it. And there's no points, there's no standings. It's there for college coaches to come and see you play. So that's the IT showcase, as opposed to the clinic being more like a camp.
Don, I'd like to add something on that too. I think that new showcase kind of schedule that you're talking about, playing one game a day, it's definitely better, probably better quality, you know, overall, because you're not playing those 5 games in 3 days or stuff like that. But the new little wrinkle too that they've done is that they're almost done like a winner's bracket and a loser's bracket, to where you're only going to play your 3 games. So you're getting a group of 8 teams possibly. So you're automatically going your top 8. You win, you go to the winner's bracket. You lose, you go to the loser's bracket. So you're still going to get your 3 games, but you're actually playing to win too, which I think sometimes the showcase kind of format in the past, when you're just seeing kids out there playing soccer, sometimes it lacked that competitive bite. But this new kind of format that puts you in a winner's bracket and a loser's bracket, I think is something that Surf Cup has done and stuff. So I think it's kind of a new little wrinkle that I think college coaches kind of enjoy the competition of it.
Great input. Yeah, good point. Good point. What do we got next, Chris? Jenny King. So she's got a 2025 player. By the way, parents, when you ask questions, say men or male or female, because it can make a difference in the answer to the question. But this 2025 player wants to attend a camp in a few weeks, because a school that, he is interested in will be one of the 5 attending. I know we shouldn't look at this as a recruiting event, especially because of his age. But one thing he wants to walk away with is feedback on what colleges believe he needs to work on in goalkeeper training this winter. He's filling out the school's prospective player information page and going to email the coach about looking forward to the camp, hoping he gets some feedback. But how likely is it they'll give him a truly honest and helpful feedback, or any at all? What do you think, Joe?
I think obviously being a younger player like that, the chances of getting some honest feedback I think are pretty good, just because he does have a couple years still of development in front of him. So a goalkeeper coach that's hopefully at that camp can say, hey, look, you need to work on your feet, or you need to work on your crosses, or whatever it may be, you know. And knowing that kid's got a couple years left to really go after it and try to improve. Sometimes I think that maybe not be the case if he's a senior, and you know, the you might not get an honest feedback there. But I think with him being a little younger, I think there's a good chance you might get some good feedback there.
It's kind of depend, isn't it, Reese? It's going to depend on who the coaches are, why they're there. And, you know, we all have to realize that generally coaches get paid to attend these camps. Quite often the head coach doesn't need the money, wants to be able to reward their assistant coaches that don't get paid very much. And so they'll send them to these camps to make evaluations. So kind of depends on the experience of the coaches there, doesn't it, Reese?
Yeah. It's going to be, you know, there's going to be different situations for the coaches as to why they're there. And so, you know, take the feedback as, don't take it as gospel, take it as a evaluation. And, you know, hopefully your club coach or high school coach can give you more of an honest evaluation, because they see you at practice, they see you in games, they know what you need to work on. I think for a coach to see you for a snippet of, you know, a camp, they're not going to be able to give a full, honest evaluation. And so you know, use it, get better from it. But I think you're going to have to rely on coaches that see you on a regular basis for feedback.
This sounds like one of these smaller camps that maybe a school is putting on. I'm a bigger fan of the smaller camps that a school is putting on than the large third party camps, because I know from talking to other coaches, including my own son, who's worked these camps recently, these large third party camps, and they're there almost strictly to collect a paycheck. It's very difficult for players to get noticed at these camps with 300-400 kids, 14, 15 college coaches who are responsible for evaluating a set number of kids that they're assigned to. So they're really, and they don't get paid, by the way, till they turn in all 15, 20, 25 evaluations. So they're very focused on getting those evaluations in so that they can get the paycheck for the weekend. This sounds like one of the smaller camps that we typically try to recommend to our clients. What else do we have? Rhonda Unruh asks, are there any recommendations for video editing software for highlight clips? I'm the wrong guy to ask. I am not a technology guy. I repeat what other people have told me. If you have a Apple iMovie, and if you have a PC, then there's quite a few different programs. Are you a technology guy? Have you done video editing?
No, I think iMovie's probably the easiest, most accessible to people because it's already on.
Yeah, you're an Apple guy though, huh?
Yeah, I'm an Apple guy. I got a Mac, so that helps.
I can help.
Chris, you're kind of a technology guy. Do you have any recommendations?
Yeah, can you hear me? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I like Huddle. I mean, it depends if they've got access to Huddle as a team and club and stuff like that. But if they have access to it, then that's what we use as a company in the UK. It's just really easy. So let's say, for example, your team films with VO or whatever sort of filming equipment. Pull the video off, put this on Huddle, and then just clip it there and then, and you can keep the. This means anything at all, but if you can keep the URL, the kind of website address can stay the same all the time, so you can update that all the time. So for example, you send a coach your link, here's my highlight video, but you've changed it 2 weeks later, that link will always stay the same. So I've always liked that. It just depends if you've got access to Huddle, but if that, assuming they haven't, I mean, I kind of back what Reese has got. I'm an Apple guy. iMovie is really easy, just drag it in, just chop it up. The hardest bit people struggle with is adding the circles and stuff like that. But there's plenty of things online. Google's your best friend. Just how do you add a circle to a soccer highlight video, something like that. But just iMovie, or I'm trying to think what else is Coral. I think that's a Windows one. But yeah, that's about it, guys.
I think you gave good advice there. Google's your best friend.
Truly is.
All right. What do we got next? Justin Galindo. I'm turning 18. I'm 18 turning 19 in December. Planning on going to college, but don't feel like hanging my boots up yet. I know I have potential, but I don't have any footage to prove it. And I don't know where to start since I was born in 2003. I'm sorry. I'm no longer a youth. Yeah, Justin, that part's not going to matter so much, man. The age is all right. You're right in the age range. You're fine. Look, everybody, you get a gap year for free from the NCAA. So you can take out what you do between graduation and that entire first year is like, it doesn't count against you, okay? As long as you're not a full-time student, it doesn't count against you. So it sounds like that's Justin's situation. And he has no film. What's he gonna do, Joe?
I think the difficult part, saying that he's a 2003, I know that most of the older age groups this year are 04s and 05s. So he's got to find a team, obviously, and try to play at the highest competitive level he can. And then, you know, whether it's a, you know, your iPhone, or try to find somebody with a video camera that, or a team that does that already, and see if you can get some footage. And, you know, this might be a case too, for somebody that, if you don't have footage, maybe an ID camp might be a good chance for him to get his name out there, because he doesn't have the opportunity to do it elsewhere. So that might, you know, ID camps, again, we've talked about, they're kind of up and they're, you have to be careful what you expect from those, but in his situation, to get himself on the radar, that might be an option for him.
I'm going to give Justin another option here. I'm looking at his Facebook page. I'm trying to figure out where he's located, but this is where junior colleges, your local junior colleges might come into play really nicely for you. A local community college, contact your coach, ask them. They will have like true tryouts, most likely. They'll probably have them in the spring and in the summer. So I would say look into your local community college too, your local junior college, Justin.
Might be Donna, a starting point. Thought I'd add to that, like, I know Division II and NAIA, you know, you're allowed one training session with that group, to kind of go out there and show yourself and train with the team. So if there is a local team to him, like you said, a local college or university that he can go train with, he's allowed one session with that group. So that's another option for him as well.
That's a great point.
We had a very similar situation when I was at my old school, which was Baldwin Wallace University. We had a couple players that were at a local JUCO, but they didn't have film or didn't have great film. So they came to a camp. We watched them play on campus, amongst players that also wanted to come to BW, who were... And they came and we watched them play, and they played well, and then they were on the roster later that year. So I would look at, like you said, Don, JUCOs, you know, that was a D3 school that I was at. So there's opportunity. You just have to go to these camps, and you have to go to these campuses.
Yeah, good point. Good point. So there you go, Justin. Hopefully that helps. Chris, by the way, we've got a Zoom user, a little anonymous there. We've got Suzanne. If either of you two want to ask a question live here, feel free to just raise your hand, and we can have you come on and field the question live too.
Oh, feel All free right. to put in the chat as well. If they want to type something in the chat, feel free to do that.
Yeah, good point. All right, what do we got? Okay, an anonymous poster happens on our group sometimes. That's okay. You guys can come in there and post anonymously. What's the likelihood of getting into a college soccer team through a tryout if college coaches have been scouting the guys they want for years now? Oh, Joe. So, okay. So I think what they're saying is they feel like college coaches have been following certain players. Those are the only ones they're going to recruit. So then what about a tryout? Well, you kind of put it forward with the Division IIs and the Division and the NAIAs. Division IIIs cannot have tryouts, folks, by the way, and neither can Division Is, and some junior colleges cannot have tryouts. So you got to ask the coach. But what would you advise this mom trying to help her kid along?
Well, I mean, to be honest, I know being at the Division II and NAIA level, sometimes we're not able to go out and see as many players as possible because we didn't have the budget to do so. So bringing guys to our practices or our camp was a big recruiting tool for us. I mean, I think at that level, you can really use that. And, you know, before ID camps were the thing, we used to bring guys on campus all the time to come for a tryout, a one-day tryout. And I did a lot of recruiting from there and found some decent players. So my advice would be, if you can get a tryout, to go and take a chance and go out there and work hard and do your thing and show what you can do. And there's going to be other opportunities. It's not like they're, you know, he can go to other schools as well. It's not just going to be one time thing. You know, only one school can see you. But I would advise to go out there and work hard and show your thing as a player, because any coach I know, if they see something in a player, they're gonna take another look or find out where he's playing next and maybe take another look at him.
Yeah, and again, not to harp on this too much, but look, there's a lot of junior colleges. I know almost every one of them in the state of California, and that's 80-something men's teams and 90-something women's teams, and a lot of junior colleges around the country, they have a summer class. So you can actually go take it with the coach. You get basically a six-week tryout, and then they tell you if you can be on the team or not. So there are ways to solve this. Any other ideas that you've got, Reese?
Well, I think ultimately, if you can help the coach win games, then the coach is going to bring you on board. So
yeah,
it doesn't matter if the coach has been watching players for a few years. That was just right place, right time, you know, right team, right tournament. So they've been able to scout them for a few years, a couple years, whatever it might be. But if you show up to a tryout, show up and play well, and you can help that coach win, then they're going to recruit you. So I don't think there's a battle between players who haven't been seen yet and players that have been seen for a couple years.
I love it. Coaches will recruit players who help them win games. I love it. Simple. All right. What else we got? Another anonymous one, guys. So how do you let a coach know that you're very interested in committing, but that you'd like to wait until the showcase season before committing? That's a tough one, folks. Look, just be honest with the coaches. Joe, I don't know what you'd have to say about this, but I always tell parents and players, be honest. The coach will tell you when the deadline is there. Fine, you get another week. You get another 2 weeks. You get another 2 days. You can, hey, I've had coaches tell players that we are placing, if you change your mind or you decide in June, then it's June. It means we really want you badly. We think you're a big difference maker. But what would you tell this parent trying to help their kid?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a conversation you have to have with your son or daughter. Because, you know, the grass isn't always greener. Sometimes it's not good waiting around for something that might never happen. Like the current offer that's on the table, is it something, is it a good offer, and is it solid? Is it something that the player would definitely see herself or himself playing at and be happy? Sometimes, you know, rolling the dice is good. I mean, I had a player who's currently playing in MLS and the national team, and I had him in my office the week before Surf Cup, and he said to me, "Coach, I'm coming, but I'm gonna see what happens at Surf Cup this weekend, and then after that, I'll be ready to sign and commit." So he went to Surf Cup and tore it up. And every college in California or the Western United States was all over him. And he went to the University of Washington and had a couple of good years. And now he's on the Seattle Sounders and he's had a great career. And I was mad because he wasn't coming to my school, but I was really happy because he got a lot of great opportunity. So it can go both ways. And it's just that you have to just be, you know, and I don't think there's a right way or wrong way there. It's just got to be what's good for you and the family.
I just had this conversation with one of my kids and his mom got a nice scholarship offer to a school we would all know the name of. And it's really great. But after the visit, just kind of wasn't feeling it. So That can happen. That can happen. And if you, opportunities will come for good players, as Reese was saying earlier. More opportunities will come for players that can make a difference, that help coaches win.
Don,
all right,
I'm going to ask you a question with this. So you've made an offer to a player, and then he says this to you. Like, thanks for the offer, coach. I'm just going to wait until after the showcase season. How are you responding? Put your coach's hat on.
What would you say, Reese?
I was going to answer this. If I'm being honest, as a coach, you know, I was a coach and I was in this situation, I'm thinking they're not 100% that they want to come to the university that I'm coaching at. And so if you're waiting for, if a better opportunity comes along, you're going to take it. That's why you're waiting. That's why you want to see what happens after the showcase season. You're waiting for a better offer, if you ask me. Now, that might be me being cynical, but that's when I read this, that's what I, you know, again, I went back to being a coach. I've offered a player and they're like, well, I'm just going to wait a few weeks. I'm going to wait till after showcase season, because you want to be seen by other coaches and wait to see if there's a better opportunity. Now, as a coach, you want every player that comes to you, you want them to want to come to your school. So maybe it's a good thing that they go out, they don't maybe get the interest that they want. And then they say, you know what, I'm going to come to your school. You know, okay, we're wanted. They want to come to our school, and you know, you've got a better chance of.
Completely understand, Reese. I think that there's a lot of sense in that. Now I'm going to give the old man experienced view. You got the young man view. I think I used to think exactly like that, Reese, until I met Mark Krikorian, and he was recruiting one of my kids, and he said, "What other schools are they looking at?" And I named off a bunch of schools, and he goes, "Good. I hope she visits them all. Going to end up choosing here anyways." Now I understand that, you know, they just won a national championship and it's Florida State, and you know, they take trips on airplanes and things like that at the big time level. But what my takeaway from Mark's statement was that I only want players here that want to be here.
Yeah,
right? Which yep. is kind of what you were saying.
You
really need players that want to be at your school, or they're just going to end up transferring and leaving anyways at some point.
Yeah, you do. You want them to be interested. And that's a part of it where if you do lose this recruit because you've kind of said, you know what, go out, go on the recruiting trail and go to the showcases and they go somewhere else, then that's recruiting, right? It's like baseball where you hit the ball 3 times out of 10, you're great. And so, you know, recruiting's the same. If you get 3 players out of 10, you know, you're having a great year. So,
Joe, do you think it depends on if there's money involved?
Yeah, I would say if there's an offer and sometimes, you know, I've run into it, I'm sure you guys have as well, in terms of coaches have given a deadline saying, look, I need to know by, you know, November 15th or something. Mm-hmm. I was never a big guy that set a deadline, especially during this fall season where there's still a lot of activity. Like, I would say, you know, most schools, if there's an offer on the table, they're going to, I would want them to make the right decision based on the knowledge. And they've visited a couple other campuses possibly, and they want to come to the school I'm at. And I would give them the appropriate time so they know they made the right decision based on the information that they have. So again, I wasn't a big deadline guy. I wanted to give them the time to think about it, but if it gets to the point where that offer's able for 2 months or something like that, then it gets a little long, right? So if that offer's on the table for a month or something or more, then you're going to start to say, okay, elsewhere, you know, as a coach, you're going to say, okay, this player is not interested. I got to start looking elsewhere.
Yeah. I was never a big deadline guy either. I just felt like it was this artificial pressure on players. Now, we are going to get to a certain point as we get through winter and into late winter, early spring, where coaches don't have a choice but to give players deadlines because they really do need to finalize their rosters. And most of us have a depth chart of some sort. We called it a war board. Joe and Reese, I don't know what you guys called it, but we called it a war board. And we had players listed in order in which we wanted them in each position. And if we didn't go to one, then we had to go to another. And once we got down to 4 or 5, we were probably starting all over again rather than go with our fifth choice. But deadlines will come. At this time, it's probably too early for that, unless there's money involved, a lot of money involved. Mm-hmm. Then you can understand why the coach might be anxious to figure out if the money's tied up or if I can pass it on to somebody else.
Well, Don, I was going to add that, you know, going back to the question, we got into it quite a bit there, but you probably have to say it like that, that you're interested, very interested in committing, but you want to wait till the end of the showcase season. That's probably how you word it. Now, I would be prepared as a player, as a parent, for that offer to now be rescinded. So that's what you have to understand, that we've give you, you know, the scenarios and how coaches are thinking. And you probably have to be ready to, for a coach to say, you know what, we waited till after the end of the showcase season and we found someone. That might be the case. And so you just have to be prepared for that scenario.
What would you do there, Reese, then, if you made an offer to someone, they say that to you, oh, I'm going to wait till after the showcase, and you've seen two players like much better in the same position, and you're going, oh, right, the money's being handed to him if he takes it. What would you do there?
Well, I think if you've, it depends on what you've said to the player. If the player comes to you and says, I'm waiting till after a showcase, then it depends on the coach's response. So if I say, okay, well, you know, in this case, we'll wait, but just know that your offer can go out to other players now, then that might be an answer that you get from a coach. Someone might say, okay, go ahead. You know, again, kind of what Don said, going back to being confident in your brand, in your university, your program, and saying, please do go out there and try and find something better than what we've got here. You know, that might be a case. A lot of coaches aren't in that position, though. Right.
They're insecure, aren't they, Reese? There's a little insecurity. Recruiting's very competitive.
I don't know if you call it insecurity. I think it's the facts are, for example, you know, a university that I coached at, one of my earlier stints, we didn't have the scholarships that other schools had in the conference. So you can, for lack of a better term, you could call it insecurity, but the reality is that you can't compete in that realm. So now you're like, okay, well, we have to get these players in. If we don't get them in, then you know, then we're out of luck. And so,
good point.
It goes back to, can players help coaches win? And you know, I always say it, but these are people's livelihoods. This isn't it's a game, but it's not a game in terms of your life, right? Like often you have, I mean, Don, you said it. We've seen the coaching carousel started. You know, there's coaches that have been moved on, and now they've got to go to a new state, a new city, whatever it might be, maybe even leave the industry. And so, you know, you waiting for a player to decide, when, going back to your question, Chris, you see two other players that maybe have a better opportunity to help you. It just really depends on you as a coach, as a vision, your team. Are you in your fourth year and you haven't won, and you've got a 4-year contract? It's tough. It's a tough, you know, you have to win. If you don't win, then you get fired. And I've seen that on Twitter. A couple coaches have been let go because they haven't got it done in their 4 years, 2-4 years, whatever it might be, in their contracts. And so it's a tough question. Again, I would go back to just be prepared that your offer is rescinded. And if you're comfortable with that, then that's a decision you have to live with.
Yeah, and it may go something. It may go something like, "Hey, that's okay. We haven't filled your spot yet, but now we are going to pull the offer back, and we're going to start looking. And if we make another offer, we make another offer. But you're always welcome to come back and talk to us and see where we're at as far as wanting you here. You know, we want you here. You know that. But we do have to fill your spot. So probably something as simple as that."
We've got, Don, we've got kind of a question in the YouTube kind of like chat box, you want to call it that. It kind of nicely fits in with this, but Yagu Schlegel said, is it appropriate to ask a coach directly where you are on his list of interested players? So it's kind of like, is that appropriate to say to a coach, like, you've made me an offer, or like, you're looking at a few players, where am I on that list? Would you have liked that as a coach, any of you?
What did you think? What did you think, Joe? So a player is on your war board. You're genuinely interested. And now they ask you how deep you are on that depth chart.
I think if you've had some conversation with this player over a couple of weeks, a month or two or whatever, and you're familiar with his or her ability, I think it's an appropriate question, because, you know, as a coach, I would say, hey, man, we want you. The roster is there for you. We want you on my team, in the program. Whenever you're ready, I'm ready, you know. Or if I come back with, you know what, I need to see you once or two more times, I'm going to see you at the showcase, you know, then they know that they probably haven't cracked that top five or whatever is for that position. But I think it's a fine, especially if there's conversation over a period of time. It's like at some point, the player needs to know, where am I on the war board, you know? And I think that that's a, you know, important for players to know. So I do think, you know, if that's the next step in that process is to have an adult conversation to find out where you stand.
Right. So simple freak. I've never thought about it like this before, guys, but simple key phrases that take you from the top of "I really want you" all the way down. So at the top is "we want to get you on campus for a visit." Okay. At the very top of that even is "we want to pay to bring you to campus on a visit," if they can do official visits. Next down is probably, "look, we're very serious about you, but we really need to get you into this to an ID camp on campus so that we can work with you because we're not quite sure yet." And then it goes all the way down to, you know, just a generic canned email. But if once you've been talking to coaches, if you're getting a lot of "good, keep sending us your schedule, send us some more film," that means you, right now you're not very high on the war board. Most likely.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You can tell if they're bringing you to campus, if they're, you know, offering you to come over for an overnight.
But they keep asking me for more film, Reese. Aren't they interested? They keep asking me for my next schedule and my next tournament. They're kind of stringing you along. It means,
yeah,
if we get down to the point that we have 25 players and we really need a player in your position, we really need to fill your roster, yeah, we would take you. You're not going to kill us, but we don't see you making it on our team.
Well, I had a player who put him in contact with a school, and within 2 weeks, he was visiting campus. You know, that's interest to me. I'm like, oh, wow. Like, that happened quicker than I expected. And so
that's interesting. We just had the girl that we had this girl commit to a school in the Carolinas, to UNC Pembroke, and that it all kind of happened like that. She was on our first couple of visits in a couple of weeks, and then 6 weeks later he was on three different visits, and it all happened. I think she signed with us in June, and now here she is committed, and it was it all happened fairly quickly. So you'll know it if coaches want you. You'll know.
Can we move on, Dom? We got deep into that one.
Yeah, let's do it.
We did.
We liked that one.
A couple of good questions.
Right.
Okay. Christy, Lisa says, film. Oh, wait a minute. Sorry. What's the number one thing you're struggling with on your child's college recruitment journey? Oh, film and then creating a highlight video. We kind of already covered it, guys, right? We talked about at least what to use, but what is your top two or three recommendations for people on film, Joe?
You mean regarding what kind or what to use, or what do you mean?
Yeah, like my number one thing is punch the coaches in the mouth in the first 30 seconds with something amazing. See them, show them something they don't see every day in the first 30 seconds. That's my number one piece of advice on film.
Yeah, I mean, if you're scoring goals, it's a great goal. If you're, you know, taking on a player, dribbling by a couple players, if you're making a hard tackle, you know, as a defender or a goalkeeper making a great save, it's like, oh, you obviously want to grab their attention in the first 5 seconds. So make that first seconds of that tape your best.
Yeah. What about you, Reese? What would your number one piece of advice be for players and parents in creating film?
Well, I think both of you said, you know, the main one for me is grabbing their attention, but I would say high angle of the pitch so we can see everything that's happening, the before, the after in that.
You don't like it when the referee keeps walking in between the player and the camera?
No, I can't say I like that. And position specific. So again, if you're a goalie, I want to see saves. Then I want to see the secondary actions, like playing out of the back. If you're a defender, I want to see you tackling. Then I want to see you breaking the lines. Right? I want to see you tackling. I want to see you intercepting. Midfielders, I want to see you creating, right? And then forward strikers, I want to see you scoring. but then we can have you, you know, as a striker, can have you assisting. So that's what I want to see in game field. So high angle, position specific.
Just to add to that, Don, like Reese is right there. Like so many videos I see, I mean, I'm sure you guys do as well, where, for example, defenders, like just showing all the the goals. And it's just like, I understand you can score some goals. You maybe scored a few goals in the last year, but just stick to show what you're good at. And then the secondary stuff can come later.
I was going to mention that, Chris. I loved what you said right there. I'm glad you said defenders, because have you guys noticed this trend that we're seeing defenders open up with playing out of the back? That's what they're showing for the first 3 minutes of their film. And I'm going, where's the tough tackles? Where's the ball winning? Where's the heading? Where's the physical challenges? Where's the shoulder challenges? Where's that game-saving slide tackle? Where's all that stuff that I need from my defenders? Like you said, Chris, it's nice. We need you to show us you can do that too. Do you think maybe this is a trend because we talk so much about playing out of the back?
Yeah, it's like the team that I went to watch last night in Manchester City. and I'm watching that, they're playing Seville, a Spanish team, and it was just my son who was next to me was like, it's like a training session. There's literally just passing out of the back, playing. There was no goal kicks whatsoever. And I'm not getting into this too deep, but it's just like, yeah, a lot of young kids try and copy that, and people believe that's what they got to try and do. And don't get me wrong, you got to try. But yeah, just for the purpose of trying to get recruited, just show what you're good at. If you are really good at playing out of the back and you're really comfortable with the ball at your feet as a defender, for example, central defender, then show that. That's cool. But ultimately, people want tough, strong tackling, heading. Obviously, playing out of the back is important. But yeah, just stick to what, I mean, we can get into this really deep, like I said, but just stick to what you're good at and show that in the first 30 seconds.
Another thing, Don, just to add on a little bit, like some videos I've seen, you see somebody take a shot and it kind of goes through a goalkeeper and it ends up being a goal. And I don't think that I like it. So I think you have to be selective with what you've, even though you scored a goal in a game, keeper's mistake or something like that. That might look that you're not playing at a high level or something like that. So I think you have to be careful with what you think is a highlight as well.
You know what I saw? Because I talk to myself when I watch film, Joe, and I it's a lot of, well, that would never be a goal for us. That would get saved every time. That right. would be an interception in our league 100% of the time. That ball would, you know, when a baller plays a slow square ball across the middle of the field and it happens to connect to somebody and they got lucky and then they take off and they get the ball back and they go, oh, that was a 1-2. Yeah, that would have been a pick and a goal going the other way in our conference. Yep. So,
right.
I talked to myself and I still do that, even though I'm not coaching anymore. I'm going, yeah, that would never happen. That would never work. And that's not a good, and that's hard for parents. So what are parents to do if they're helping their kids put the video together? I think they need to get somebody outside the family that really knows soccer well, huh? To look at their video.
Yeah. Yeah. Coach, their club coach or hopefully their high school coach should be able to do that. You know, in theory, I think, but I would think their club coach should be able to say, look that out, or, hey, that's good. You know, whatever it may be.
That's good.
I'm just going to ask another counter question. Sorry, I'm kind of here for all these little additional questions tonight. Okay. You can tell it's a little bit earlier this time because the clocks have gone back in England. So that's why I've got a bit of energy. So we do a lot of work in Africa, and I'm interested in what you guys think. Maybe one of you can answer it, or all three of you, but when you get like an African player who contacts you, athletic, quick, but the fields they play on are just not the best. Obviously, it's the surroundings they're in. I mean, I've done a lot of work in Kenya. We have our office there. But sometimes I watch some of the highlight videos of our players there and it's like, oh my God. So how do you, as college coaches, look at something like that and say, well, that kid is a potential for my team, or can you not? I don't know. I'm interested to know.
Well, for me, guys, the only thing I wonder is, so if the pitch is so bad that the ball has to be in the air a lot, then I wonder if they can play on the floor. That'd be the question. And I want to see the types of challenges. I know from myself, having grown up in an area that had really bad pitches, nothing like what I see out of that you're talking about, Chris, but it helped my first touch. It helped me be a better player. I don't know. What do you think, Joe? Because we see South American videos like this too, right?
Definitely. I think that for me, it's like when I see a field like that, I'm like, wow, look at the state of that field. That's usually my first thing. But I was like, man, if this kid can play on a field like that, what's he going to do on a good field? That's what I would, you know, because and you're talking about, I would say another thing is a true love of the game. When somebody's playing in some of those, you know, kind of bad fields and stuff, you're like, man, this kid loves it. So I think there's probably another bonus to that as well.
Yeah. Does it leave any questions in your mind, Reese, as a coach?
You're looking at, you know, other parts of the game that might not, might not be impacted by the field. So, you know, are they looking over their shoulder before they receive the ball? So you talk about awareness there. You know, when they shoot, are they, you know, typically low, hard across the keeper, right? Are they doing that? Yeah, it might go wide or but are they aiming to do that? So you're trying to decipher the film a little bit better. A little bit more than you would, you know, of a video, you know, from someone in England or the United States. So you're trying to decipher it a little bit more. Have they got the attributes that are needed based on, you know, the field that they're on?
But in general, I think we all agree with what Joe said, right? If they can play on that,
yes,
this is going to be a lot of fun.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, thanks for that.
Okay, so based on that same question, what's the number one thing that we asked? So we asked this question, by the way, last week, I think, in our group. What's the number one thing you're struggling with on your child's college soccer recruitment journey? And Melissa Bolden says, getting offers with closed deadlines while hoping and praying another school contacts you. Well, I think we beat that one with a stick pretty good in our last week.
Yeah.
So you got the idea there, Melissa.
Yeah, just rewind the video if you're watching it live.
Yeah.
This is one that's come through the website.
Okay. So Marie Starr asks, I was planning on signing my NLI for women's soccer on November 9th. So NLI stands for, everybody, by the way, National Letter of Intent. I just found out that the D1 college I'm planning to attend on doesn't send out their NLI until February. They said they would send a piece of paper with the school's letterhead and some information, but it wouldn't be the real NLI. Is this normal? Are all the NLIs for November for women's soccer just a piece of paper to sign in November 9th, and then they get the real NLI in February to sign? All right. Do you want to start with that one? It's a pretty clear cut answer, isn't it, Joe? But you're going through this with your son right now, so might as well ask you.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting ready to sign on November 9th, and it's an official document. It's not something that's just a piece of paper that's non-binding. So to me, the letter of intent, the reason of that is it's locked in. It's you're locked in and signed, sealed, delivered for that university. A random piece of paper, you know, doesn't lock the university into you or you into the university. There's nothing binding there. So I think that would be kind of a red flag for me.
Yeah. This is a very odd one, isn't it, Reese? I've never heard of this before.
Yeah. And again, the coaching carousel started. So you just got to be careful, because there's going to be a lot of jobs that are lost, and then, you know, and a lot of coaches who are now going to step into those jobs, and they're going to look at and I'll put this on Twitter, actually, they're going to look at, you know, who that class is, right? So yeah, like Joe said, you want something binding, and it doesn't sound like you're going to have that, and now waiting 4 months to have that, you know, that doesn't sit right with me personally.
I can't tell you what that coach, what were you going to say, Joe? Were you going to say something?
Just say there's very specific rules and deadlines. Once you receive that in an email about an NLI, you have a certain amount of time to sign and send it back.
So it's very specific on what you can and can't do. And again, it's, it just shows you that this is the real thing.
And I can only speculate. I don't want to speculate too hard, but it could be that there's no money involved here. Maybe the player is misunderstanding what an NLI is. Maybe NLI is only signed when there's money involved. So if you're a preferred walk-on, so you can come here, you can play, but there, we don't have any money for you this year, there is no NLI to sign. Now, in that case, the coach might send you a piece of paper saying that you have a roster spot just so you can sign with your friends on signing day. That is a possibility here. But I other than that, this is odd, Marie. This is odd.
We used to have something in our old conference called a conference letter of intent, which was an agreement, and there was no money attached to it, but it basically, you know, it gave you something to sign and you're officially on that roster. So you, the school couldn't, you know, say 3 months later that, hey, your roster spot's been taken. It's like, once you sign that, you are signed, sealed, and delivered in that school and that roster, and it locked you in. So you couldn't sign with another school with that conference. But if another offer came along and you got money somewhere else, then that letter of intent became, you know, kind of null and void. So that might be the reason. And again, I do think there's something to be said that if you're getting offered a roster spot, you want to sign something, right? You know, everybody else is signing something. You want to feel like you're, you know, committed to that school and they're committed to you. So that could be the situation here too.
Yeah. All right. That's fun. I like getting those odd ones. Okay, our tweet of the week comes to Andre Luciano. I thought Andre would be here, and then he just messaged me and said he couldn't make it today. But he said a lot of college games on this week for women's college deciding the conference championships. They're on TV. Great opportunity to assess your individual ability versus the talent that you see on the screen. Have to measure yourself against those you aspire to compete against. Always feels weird reading tweets because we all leave out the pronouns and the stuff to shorten them up. Yeah, a lot of college soccer on this week. I know we all watch. I think we all have ESPN Plus, don't we?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. We've been saying this for a while, for the season, right? And last season. And ESPN Plus does a great job of putting a plethora of games on. There's so many games that you can watch. And I know, Don, you've been following NC State. I've been following Cal Poly men's and women's in town here, go to the games. When they're on the road, I'll watch it on ESPN Plus. I've got a good friend at NIU. I was able to watch his team perform and they had a good season. So you can just, you know, and I've got friends. We've all got friends in, you know, in schools that we're supporting. So we're able to watch them across the country. So Andre's right. Go and watch. This is the top level now, right? This is the championships of the conference. So, you know, the cream of the crop, you're able to watch. But, you know, just know that if you didn't watch many games this year, then obviously you can do that next year and you'll be able to see a lot of games on ESPN Plus, you know, as you go through your recruiting process.
How important is it, Joe, for watching games, boys and girls?
I think it's really important. I mean, I've always been a student of the game to where I learned a lot by watching the game for me as a player and a coach. And I think it's good to see the level, you know, if that's a level you're entertaining, whether it's a Division I, Division II, Division III or whatever. I think it's a good visual to see the campus, to see possibly the facility, the competition level. There's so many things you can see. And again, sometimes if a team has a bad game, you can't just watch them once, but I do think it's a great tool to have. And seeing all these games on TV, it's funny. As a coach, I know I've been at this part of the season and you're just kind of like hoping to stay healthy. You know, you're trying to get into a conference tournament championship or something. And here on the other side, it's like, man, this season went by pretty quick. Cause you haven't gone through that day-to-day grind. But it's like, there's a lot of important games coming up, and everybody's trying to fight for that conference berth, possibly through a tournament championship. And, you know, so it's an exciting time, and you can definitely see some good games.
That's fun. It's a war. Okay. And I think that's it that you've got for us, Chris, because I just want to wrap it up with a very short 5-minute discussion here. So Joe, Reese, we've got a couple things going on. So we've got commitments coming up here. So National Signing Day. What I want to know is, should players start to panic if they don't have a school? Because they're going to see on social media, I've signed, I've signed, I've signed, I've signed. They're going to see hundreds of postings. But now remember, there's about 12,000 women's openings. You're not going to see 12,000 postings for signing. And there's about 9,000 men's openings for freshmen. You're not going to see 9,000 signings. Should players start to panic, Reese?
No, you've got to follow your own path. You know, their journey and their path is totally different to yours for a number of reasons. It could be club, where you live geographically, it could be different, the league that you're in. So, you know, you have to be careful to compare yourself to other people and just follow your path. Like I said before, when I got tweet of the week, control the controllable, you know, and do what you can do, right? Which is work hard, you know, play hard, reach out to coaches, you know, get in the weight room, your nutrition, do what you can do and everything will pan out.
Chris, you've been at this, is this 12, year 12 for SRUSA now, going into year 13?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. I think it, roughly. Who knows?
So, you know, what happens in, you know, even let's just say February, March, April. In all of your years, have you ever seen a year that college coaches weren't still looking for players later?
Well, no. I mean, God. Like I talked about a couple of weeks ago, I think it was, but I'd say 90% of our clients are getting the offers from like February onwards. That's because I deal predominantly with UK-based players. Don't get me wrong, there's exceptions to that rule, and you guys deal more with the domestic kids, but young gentlemen, young women. But yeah, coaches are all looking all the way through until preseason. In preseason, I get messages. Chris, got any players? Like Reese mentioned, everyone's on their own journey. It's really difficult. I understand it if you've got a teammate who's committing and they've signed somewhere and you've not got any offers and stuff like that. But everyone's got different variables, different academics, different finances, different playing abilities, different positions. And ultimately it's becoming more and more competitive to get in the college system. So just concentrate on yourself and don't worry about anybody else. But offers will come if you are of the level.
And Joe, you've seen this now from myriad of different levels, right? Through between your own kids and your coaching career, you've seen this at every level in the country. What would you tell kids out there that are going to, they're feeling the pressure. I know they're feeling the pressure because they're telling me.
Yeah. I mean, the early signing thing is kind of been a nice thing for those players that, you know, like my son's been committed for a long time. So, but there's a lot of kids that he's playing with on the same team that are still not committed and they're not going to be signing, you know, this coming week or whatever. So, and he's playing at a very high level. So it's not just, you know, there's top level players that are not signing. So there's definitely not a time to freak out. There's still time, but at the same time, you definitely want to remain or get active over the next couple of months. So you're pushing and hopefully come February or March, you know what you're doing. But now it's a positive for those kids that have signed, but there's still plenty of positions open.
Yeah. And I've noticed even with our Americans, Chris, you talked about the English, but I've been doing this with SRUSA since 2018, huh? And so I've noticed gone through a number of seasons, And even in junior college, it was very much the same pattern that I had kids committing to Penn State in March and April. So coaches are looking for players. My girl that signed for Florida State. That's commitment to Florida State. And that was a full ride, women's side, biggest conference in the country, one of the biggest teams in the country. And that commitment was in February of her senior year. If a coach really wants you, they'll figure out a way to make it work.
Yeah. And also, sorry to add to that as well, coaches are, they realize internationally there's a lot of players that become available at the last minute that they've never heard of before. So money's kept aside. So if that, for example, a coach might be waiting on a, hey, let's see if Manchester United release a player. And that doesn't work out. They might have to go for somebody domestically. And that means the domestic kid, if they're available and they're good, they could get some good options very late on as well. We're not saying everyone's going to get options late. It's just, like I say, everyone's on a different journey.
The transfer portal will open up some stuff too. I think Don and I have talked about this a little, about this, where coaches might be delaying their decisions even a little bit more now because of this transfer portal. So they're going to keep some spots open for sure.
I was just going to say, I just got to your point, Chris, I won't say who the coach is, but it's a school that any kid in the country would know the name of, and would most kids in the country have this school on their list. Said that he's specifically held money, and this is on the women's side, specifically held money out aside for transfers, overseas kids, or gap year kids. Specifically held money out aside. So, and that's for 23s. It's becoming a trend.
Yeah. Well, it's like we've got a player at the minute who's played a high level, played national team, and he's about to go on the transfer portal. So I'm withholding some of our players in that position who are in England at the minute, because I know he's more suitable for some of the coaches that they're asking me for this position. I'm trying not to give anything away, but basically, the transfer portal is a game changer for good and bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the last topic is, I know we've gone a little long here, guys. Thanks. I appreciate you hanging out with us. But the next, the what's coming up here is the transfer portal. It's starting. It's happening. And it's going to affect dramatically how this goes. And you combine the transfer portal with the number of coaching turnovers that happen every year. I think there was about 60 on the women's side last year. I think it'll be at least that, if not more this year. On the men's side, and that's Division One, by the way. On the men's side, I think it was about 50 on the men's side. And then you start counting all the other divisions, there'll be hundreds of coaching turnovers in the men's and the women's side this year. So you combine that with the transfer portal, it's going to affect things, isn't it, Joe?
Definitely. I mean, there's the, you know, different things happen there, and there's a lot of variables. So, you know, it's good to stay current, stay aware, and be ready for the opportunity that comes. And again, this is the other thing I keep on saying to say a coach right now contacts you, and it's a school that maybe you're not really entertaining. You still need to reply to that coach, because what if that coach leaves that school and goes somewhere else, and now he or she's at a school that you do want to go to? This is a bridge that you already have that's going to give you an opportunity to possibly play the school that you really like. So it's always good to keep communicating, stay on top of things, and hopefully those doors are open for you.
Yeah, and if you folks think that doesn't happen, you got my son this year that goes from a Division III school in Beloit, Wisconsin, that most people have never heard of, to North Carolina State in the ACC in a year. These type of movements happen all over the country, and I just say that one because it's right in front of me. And people think this stuff doesn't happen. It happens. My good friend Colton Bryant has gone from a junior college to Lamar that looks like it's going to make the tournament. Absolutely tore things up this year. And now kids are starting to know the name of a school, right? Joe's spot on with that one. That's a good advice, Joe. What about you, Reese? Any closing comments on that?
Yeah, I just think with the transfer portal, players who are, you know, traditional students, so they're in high school, they're juniors, seniors, about to go to college, just know that you're not just competing against your class now and your peers. You're also competing against transfers who are in college. I think I mentioned it before. They've done the homesickness. They understand living on campus, being away from home, the time management aspect. They understand that. So that's where I think the transfer portal changes aspects of the recruiting cycle for a lot of players who before were just like, okay, I'm a junior. I need to start looking at schools. I'm a senior. I'm committing. Now it's, okay, I'm a senior. I'm ready to commit. But coaches are waiting a little bit because they're waiting to see if a senior or a junior, sorry, in college or a sophomore is about to transfer, right? And now they can get maybe what they view as an instant impact player compared to a younger player who may not have that same impact. So I think that's how players have to look at it. Again, you can't control that. That's just an aspect of the recruiting process that is now happening within the recruiting process. But know that, educate yourself, understand it, and again, control what you can control.
And players always transferred, right, Chris? But have you noticed a difference in the recruiting process since the portal has made it so much easier?
Well, yeah, naturally. I mean, JUCO, obviously people always transferred, but it's just now, I don't know, I'm finding people think, oh, there's a transfer portal there. It's not quite working out. I've not played as many games as I want to play, or I don't know. I haven't got the fight. I'm going to move. It's easy to do. But whereas before it was like, I've got to go speak to a coach and get release. And then I've got to hopefully find out somebody that likes me. And it's a bit harder because I've got to email. And if they don't get back to me, it's really difficult. Like it's, yeah, it's just made life a little bit easier to move around. But also on the downside of it, people move around too easily as well. So, but as a coach, you're obviously going to use that portal because there's some good players that do pop in there. Whether for reasons that are bad, maybe they're not playing and maybe fall out with the coach, or they actually want to try play at a better school or a new challenge, or they want to move. There's different reasons for everyone, but yeah, I quite like the portal. If I was a coach, it's probably the first thing I would look at. I'd recruit normally, but I would definitely be having that as well. Like Reese said, there's people who could be instant, immediate impact players, whereas the young freshman might take a year to bed in.
Right. Well, I think we've done a good job here, guys. Good work. We got a lot of questions, and we'll look forward to seeing you guys next week. So remember, folks, you can find us Inside College Soccer. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and feel free to reach out with any questions. As long as you guys keep asking questions, we'll keep showing up to answer them. Have a good week, everybody.